welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, folks, and it is now or never, and you are not going to find any news that the federal government is stopping all of their tyranny, that they're going to undo all of these evil things that are destroying us. They're actually going to comply to the Constitution. They're going to continue being the sole proprietor. They're going to continue being the sole orchestrator, the sole operator in destroying our Republican Constitution. That's what they're doing. They're executing economic warfare. They're executing an actual invasion. I mean, look at the crap that they're getting away with. And like nobody's even talking about this in plain common sense. Not even journalism, not even out of the UK, where sometimes, you know, the plain and obvious will come. Maybe Al Jazeera, and I probably mispronounced that, but you know my point. My point is that we won't get the truth from any media in the United States. You won't even get this. I mean, I even hear the kowtowing by the entertainers. Oh, well, we believe in, you know, the January 6th, anybody that went into that building was violating the law. Are you kidding me? That's the people's building. Congress violated the law by locking it while they were in chambers. The people have a right to petition them, and that right shall not be abridged, period. There's no exceptions. Oh, well, when Congress doesn't want to be petitioned. No. No. We have a right to petition our government for the redress of grievances, period. Now, I'm just going to dive into the basic obligatories, but let me remind you, we need to actually start having this conversation of what kind of president does America deserve. And as a matter of fact, you need to actually take this into your county level. You need to look at the lowest common denominator in your election area. If it's your county, if it's a legislative district, the conversation needs to happen at your county level. Are all of these people representing you? Do your county commissioners really represent you, or are they representing the lobbyists that sit behind them? Do your legislators represent you? Technically, you really don't want them to represent you. What you need to demand, and this is the whole collective conscience change of paradigm. You need to demand that your representatives and all of your public servants represent the Constitution, which they are required, legally obligated to support. If they're supporting the Constitution, they are representing you. They're doing the best that they can do when they're supporting the Constitution and in compliance. So with that, let me kind of just dive into this little tidbit that you probably hear, but you ignore all the time. That this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And you're listening to the only show. And you know what? I might just one of these days surprise you and actually get, because I'm hoping, I've been talking to a few people, you know, to share their, you know, their web design with yours truly, so that I might be able to actually try to implement a new, you know, high speed, low drag, because I get complaints all the time about my websites because, they're old school, you know. I kind of like the way I've done it, but that's okay. I just kind of figured it all out on my own, but I'm trying to get somebody to, you know, here, take this, like this campaign page or what have you, and we'll see where we go with it. You know what I mean? Anyway, and I might actually deploy it for the Republic Review page. There you go. And get that kind of started. But not that I don't have anything else to do. I'm trying to write an article. I've got these, you know, these notations on the Constitution along with all the other little things. And I can tell you, as soon as we get the good weather months behind us and where I'm finally freed from the toiling in the yard and toiling, you know, around the house, because when you get to that freezing point, snow time, that's a couple of months right there where I can actually write and I can sit down and do things. So anyway, you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. So we got to actually start really helping you understand why these things are, one, important and how you can benefit and how you can actually lead by using the Constitution. Lead your county, lead the restoration and the recovery of constitutional principles right there in your own local government. Now, we're going through the Constitution. It's been Constitution Month. I don't think anybody takes Constitution Month, but this document is so important that it should actually take as whatever it really takes to get through this. And that's our attitude here. You got these other people, oh, they'll give it a mention, right? I mean, if you're lucky, you'll actually hear a conservative entertainer mention, that's Constitution Day. Well, Saturday, you know, or this year it was on a Saturday. So there's a good chance that Hannity, you know, Levin and all these other people may have mentioned something about it, but not much. That's it. In other words, they're not in love with this document like yours truly. They don't recognize, you know, the divine hand of providence in this document and why it is so important and why it actually possesses everything we need to go and, you know, undo all of the things that were done unconstitutionally. And we don't need an Article 5 convention to do that. We only need First Amendment petitions to start doing it. And we also need common law courts. Got to restore common law courts as well. Anyway, we're in Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution. This is where the president has been given some powers to do, you know, appointments and so forth. And this is what it says. He shall from time to time give, actually, this is the State of the Union, pardon me. He shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time and adjournment, he may adjourn them to such a time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers, if these are foreign, and he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. Well, so one of the things that I think, your big takeaway is that he actually has the ability to adjourn Congress. In other words, you know, what would have happened if Trump would have basically came in and said, you're adjourned. Go ahead, go home. What would have happened? I'm telling you, folks, you know, the president actually has that power right there. Even if there's a disagreement, he can adjourn them. Okay, so Section 4. The president, the vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. So lying to Congress, is that a crime? I'm looking at Nixon. And oh, by the way, the one thing that could have happened had the Senate actually tried Nixon and convicted him, there was no way he could have been pardoned by Ford. As a matter of fact, they could have undone Ford's pardon. And you got to understand that it was so binary. In other words, had the Senate gone down the path of actually impeaching Nixon to punish him, then I believe that Carter would not have become president. But because the Senate didn't, because at that point in time, Congress was kind of, you know, in the tank for the Democrats at that point, right? because that's what always happens. You know, you got a Republican president, Congress turns Democrat. You got a Democratic president, Congress turns Republican. So we can expect in this midterm that Congress is going to turn Republican because it's the midterm of a Democratic or a communist president, right? So, and actually an unconstitutional president at that. And the funny thing is we're becoming far less and less polarized regarding these ideologies. And that's just because it's harder to tell between communist Democrats and communist Republicans. They're all bad. Anyway, so had Nixon been tried, they could have removed his emoluments and taken away his security details and all of that. Yes. Now, Article 3. This is very interesting, and obviously it starts off just like the other two articles. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may direct from time to time ordain and establish. So they have the ability in the inferior courts from time to time to ordain and establish. But the Supreme Court is what it is. Now, I honestly believe and I advocate that in a Republican form of government, and I'm going to expose this to you because I'm willing to defend these ideas because these ideas are suggestions that I think we need to have the dialogue on. I believe you need to throw things out onto the table, put it up on the whiteboard and say, you know, what's wrong with this? And let's work through it. And maybe in some ways, we can improve upon it, but I think these beg the question. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's just get back to Article 3. We've already kind of established that Congress may from time to time ordain and establish inferior courts. But nowhere does it state that they can really dabble too much. Now, they were supposed to create a Judiciary Act. And so the Judiciary Act is where they laid it out to how the Supreme Court would be, you know, function and kind of operate. But they don't have the ability to fiddle with their jurisdiction and or
give them more powers than the Constitution gives them. And so we'll get into that right here in Section 2. But before so, we've still got a little bit of Section 1 to go through. The judges, both of the Supreme and Inferior Courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. So in other words, they can't take a deduction in pay. It only goes up. That I have a problem with. Because, in other words, it will always, you know, either stay the same or go up. Well, what happens if all of a sudden we have a dramatic adjustment of our economy where all of a sudden a dollar is worth a dollar again instead of, you know, $100 being worth a dollar? In other words, we actually go back to the value of a dollar. Well, should they still make these sky-high salaries or should they take a deduction? Because if we actually fix the cost of dollars, what goes along with that is we have to fix the wages that go with that. Well, that means that you have to be able to change the compensation level by lowering it. And so I have a problem with anything like this that, you know, kind of hard, you know, cast into stone that, oh, you can't deduct their pay. You have to always, you can keep it the same or increase it, but that's the only direction. Anyway, Section 2 is probably the most important part, in my opinion, of Article 3, because this is what clarifies jurisdiction. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity, quote, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. In other words, if it's not enumerated, they can't make a treaty under the United States government can't make a treaty under their authority if it's something that's not in their jurisdiction or their enumerated powers. It's everything is tied to the enumerations, folks. I go through this, and if I pounded this out every day, you know, with every line and everything else, I think most people would just be, you know, just frustrated and tired of hearing the word enumerated. But I can't say it enough and still make this show interesting. But the point is that that is the limit of their jurisdiction. Now, the 11th Amendment makes a huge change between what we read in Section 2. And so what it does do is it also says, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and councils, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, and to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states. Then, going from the rest of this, this has all been modified by the 11th Amendment. In other words, everything else, if I read it now, it'll only cloud or confuse the issue because the 11th Amendment reeled back the federal government's ability to stick its nose into cases between people and states and so forth and so on. So the next part of this section is, in all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, and those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. And that as Congress shall make, that was the Judiciary Act of 1790, the Judiciary Act of 1792, and so forth. They started kind of help, you know, delineating these things. And it was the Judiciary Act that caused the need for the 11th Amendment, where the states came in and said, no, 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 no. You're not sticking your nose in between, you know, the states and citizens and or, you know, citizen of a different state and, the, you know, and a state. No, you're not doing that. You cannot construe that you have jurisdiction over that, nor will we grant that. So that was all removed, that part of the very first paragraph of Section 2. About half that sentence of jurisdiction was removed because the state said, nope, we don't think that's a good thing. We're taking that back. The final part of Section 2 is the trial of all crimes except in cases of impeachment shall be by jury, and such trial shall be held in the state where the said crimes have been committed, but when not committed within any state, the trial shall be at such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. So that's interesting. If you commit a crime overseas, then Congress will kind of dictate where that's going to be. Well, I don't know if I like that. I mean, if you come back to the United States, then why can't you go to the inferior court that's closer to you instead of being dragged in front of Congress or dragged to the federal seat? I think that it should be more common sense, but anyway, it is what it is. Section 3 of Article 3. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. There you go right there. So somewhere somebody said that, oh, well, you can't commit treason unless Congress has declared war. No, that's not true. As a matter of fact, Islam has declared war against the United States and against all Christian nations and against all Christian people. Does that mean the United States has to declare war? Or can we actually have an enemy that is attacking us, whether they're attacking us morally, whether they're attacking us, you know, socially or, you know, economically? It doesn't matter how they're waging war. They're, you know, it doesn't mean that they have to deploy tanks, you know, into America from Mexico for Mexico to become, you know, an enemy. And so this whole concept, you show me how Congress declared war in the Whiskey Rebellion when they tried 24 people for treason because they were either adhering to, and at this point in time, they weren't actually levying war. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. So how is it that they charged 24 men and convicted two with treason for rebelling against the laws of the Union? That was it right there. If you're rebelling against the laws of the Union, in other words, you're actually a domestic, if you want to call them a terrorist, you're a domestic enemy of the Constitution when you're not going to abide by the Constitution. All right, so you can't commit treason by doing so. It doesn't have to be a foreign enemy. It doesn't have to be a foreign entity that is waging or levying some form of warfare. You can do it as a citizen. Anybody that says you can't be tried for treason or you can't be charged with treason if Congress hasn't declared war, whoever said that's an idiot. Whoever says that, they are an idiot. They have to read the Constitution. You can't go by the annotated Constitution or however Congress is redefining this stuff. Go look at the Whiskey Rebellion, and the fact of the matter is 24 people were tried with treason, two were convicted. Okay. The next part. The Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attained. So this forfeiture and corruption of blood means going after, you know, the family and so forth and holding them guilty for the same thing. You can't do that. You actually have to make a case against everybody, not because of, you know, guilt by association or guilt because they're family members. So the concept of even forfeiture they can't forfeit and they can't take all of your possessions if, you know, if some guy commits treason or some gal commits treason. They can't seize all your property and take it away from your spouse. They can't do it. Property forfeiture is very, very stringent and very, very unconstitutional. When they try to come along and say, oh, you can't do that, we're gonna take your property from you. They can't, actually. Anyway, now we're getting into Article 4. And Article 4 has a lot of really interesting parts to it that, you know, it's kind of like the other things that are important to include, but not significant to the changing of the Constitution, nor the enforcement and the supremacy of the Constitution, those types of things. And so this is kind of interesting, but these are just the place where they put the other things that were important. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so this is kind of interesting. Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. And the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. So where do you go to get everything that's happened in this other state? In other words, you should have available to you all of these records, these acts, these judicial proceedings that have occurred in every other state of the union. You have a right, a constitutional right, to this information. And they're not giving it to you. Isn't that interesting? This is a huge violation of the Constitution because there are plenty of things, because there's nowhere in here where secrecy is allowed. And the states are doing plenty of things that they're not publishing to let you know, hey, they're doing this. As a matter of fact, this should be the commonality, right? I would love to see an organization come along and say there needs to be a single standard, a single standard. That's what this is really trying to do. And actually so that you can have a spreadsheet or a database that actually kind of categorizes everything from property rights, from criminal law, criminal punishment, these types of things, so that everybody has full access to what the heck they're doing across the union, what they're doing in your state and what's going on and how they're doing it in other states. Anyway, that's kind of interesting that right there was thrown out there, that they were going to make sure that every citizen knew what was going on in all of the other states as well. And there's a reason for this, folks. It's called transparency. They wanted to make sure that all records and everything the government did would be available to everybody, except for those things that require national secrecy. This is why I'm going to revisit this really quick and basically tell you it doesn't matter when it comes to national secrecy. They cannot keep it from, you know, being disclosed. In other words, it should be required if they're spending money or whatever they're doing for national secrets, they should have at least it available to your state legislators. Your state legislators should be read in, and they should be overseeing intelligence activities and intelligence processes and so forth. This is how we reel them in. It's not by allowing these narcissist rogue individuals like Snowden to go and do bad things to make him look good. Anyway, Section 2. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. This was redefined in the 14th Amendment to basically state that no state shall make or enforce any law that shall abridge the privileges and immunities of a United States citizen. In other words, all of the privileges and immunities that the U.S. Constitution guarantees to you cannot be abridged by a state. They can't make or enforce a law. In other words, your HOAs, you know, some of these businesses, you know, restricting, you know, Second Amendment rights, constitutional carrying, and so forth. No state can make or allow any organization to enforce those laws. When they come along and say, oh, well, you know, this person took your property. They took your gun because you went on their private property, and because it was a business or some entity, right? And they said, oh, well, you know, we're confiscating guns because we don't allow it. Well, then you go to the state and say, hey, I want my gun back. The state has to actually enforce that. They have to give you your gun back because they cannot make or enforce any law that violates your privileges and immunities as a U.S. citizen. That's why, you know, most people don't want you to know, you know, that the states, you know, their hands are tied. It's the same thing with these initiative petitions, these laws that your grocery stores will come up and create to say, oh, well, you can't have anything political on our premises for asking people to sign your petitions. Well, they may be able to do that regarding political activity, such as voter initiatives and those types of things, because those aren't a constitutional right. But your right to petition government for the redress of grievance is a constitutional right. So no state can enforce any grocery store, Walmart, in enforcing you to say you can't, you know, have people sign your petitions for the redress of grievance. This is a constitutional right, folks. And when somebody wants to sign a petition, wherever it is that they are in the United States, they have the ability to do that. The people, when it comes to this First Amendment petition, we are the kings of it, and we cannot be stopped. But they don't want to do this, and I'm telling you, that's why they're doing everything they can to teach you otherwise, and they're trying to tell you that it means something different than what it really does mean. This is how they obfuscate and how they've gotten away with all of this tyranny over the course of the, you know, all of these years. But anyway, So the next part of Section 2, a person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. And so this is the one part of the Constitution that gives us teeth to recalling anybody at the federal government to say, look, you're violating your oath of office, you're violating the Constitution, and we're charging you with treason against the Constitution, and then having that person is then to be extradited back. They can't protect you. Congress cannot protect you. Remember, Congress can only protect you if it's a misdemeanor. But if it is a felony, which treason is a felony, violating one's oath of office, that is a treasonable offense. Anyway, okay, so the next one is modified by the 13th Amendment. So I don't know if I should read this because this thing has actually been shut down. And it is basically no person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof escaping into another shall, in consequence of any law or regulations therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. In other words, the runaway slaves clause, you know, they have to restore or return you if somebody comes up and says, hey, that person's my slave. Anyway, Section 3. Now, this is the one you hear me talk about all the time. As a matter of fact, I make a lot of political hay on this. Any good president that has a constitutional focus, in foreign policy will diverge from the policies of manipulation and regime change and allowing, you know, this perpetuation of war and all of this other intrigue going on throughout the world. And what he should do, or they should do, is follow Section 3 of allowing any state to be placed onto the path of becoming a state in the Union. This is what Section 3 states. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union. Well, where's the caveat? Does the new states have to be within a latitude and longitude parameter or a box, a geographical box on the earth? Or is there any limitation of who these new states would be? No. If they're on this earth and they are a state, they can become a new state into this Union. In other words, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of another state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as of the Congress. To me, this makes logical sense that if you're going to split your state, that the state legislatures kind of have to agree with this. And the best way to do this, folks, the best way to do this is to get your counties, the counties that actually want to break away, and you're just tired of the tyranny, get your counties to petition for another constitutional convention that was done in the same manner when the state was created. And in other words, fall back onto the Enabling Acts and say, we are going to have a constitutional convention, so we're going to basically have the counties send delegates based on apportionment, right? So they'll determine the apportionment of, you know, what the populated counties get and what the least populated counties get. But when it comes down to actually voting for this, that, or the other thing in the Constitution and how its final say, then that itself, that itself is voted by each county by delegation. In other words, the county gets one vote. You may have 20, you know, delegates, and another county may only have one. Each county has equal vote, just like in the ratification of an amendment and or in the process of a constitutional convention. We will be right back after these two promos. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so obviously I'm not doing really well in pointing out all these violations, but this obviously, no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, but without the consent of the legislatures thereof. And I believe this, if I look at the history, I think there's something fishy about West Virginia breaking away from Virginia and how Congress just allowed it to happen. I'm here to tell you that there are some problems with the states being able to, you know, rewrite their constitutions and so forth. And there's problems with the counties and the county role. Let me kind of step back. If we look at the Reynolds v. Sims, it was in the 1960s where a Supreme Court, or actually a court, ruled that the counties aren't sovereign bodies. Well, hold on here. The states were established by the counties, and the court's going to come along and say that counties aren't sovereign bodies because it's not like we've got a lot of new states coming along. It's been so long since people forgot the role of the county in the creation of the states that they got away with telling you that the parents are insignificant. When you look at the role of government, who are the parents of the federal government? Well, who created the federal government? The states did. Okay, fine. Then the states are the parents. Well, who are the parents of the states? The counties. The original 13 states were created by charters from the monarchs. So they don't count because they became sovereign states after they revolted. But in the Union, in adding new states into the Union, the states were formed by the counties. What ended up happening was the territory was delineated and county governments were created in the territory. And when that territory was then to be broken aside and or to become enabled to become a state, the counties would form into a convention by delegates and create their constitution. So going back to this whole thing about splitting states, if you live in a state, if you live in Indiana, you live in Illinois, you live in Oregon, Washington, you live in Nevada, any state where you have a population center that is running the entire state, you have the constitutional power to get all of your red counties, all of the other counties that aren't a part of that population center, to basically demand a constitutional convention to reel back in and take away the powers that these idiots, by using democracy, have done in destroying and dictating what you can do with your property throughout the rest of the state. I mean, we see this, and this is how states are turning blue. You take these red counties and you get a constitutional convention and you basically knock out all of these things that actually the progressives have created, either by their own amendments, and you take back the ability for a direct population to amend your constitution. Change your constitution to dictate that only three-fourths of the counties have to pass it. It is not by popular vote. It is by the passage of a popular vote of each county that three-fourths of the counties have to agree with the amendment. Make it hard for them to be able to enact laws and changes to the constitution to start raining tyranny upon you. You can use your counties to do this. And this is how you can actually start going down the path. Because what will end up happening? So this goes back to splitting a state. What will end up happening when you actually get your red counties all in acquiescence? Or they all agree that they want to demand a constitutional convention? And I'll give you the state of Washington as a good example. There are more counties, red counties, than there are blue, and they don't like what the Seattle area is doing to the state. So you get these red counties to actually say, we're in favor of a constitutional convention to rewrite, and we're going to get rid of all of these things that you have done. We're going to disband this Environmental Protection Agency. We're going to get rid of those things, and we're actually going to take this back to, you know, a liberty-supporting constitutional government, and we're going to empower the counties, and we're going to make it hard for you to amend the Constitution. When these blue counties, like King County, these highly populated counties, are going to see that this is what you're going to do, guess what they'll be happy to do? They'll be happy to let you split and take your counties with you so that they can maintain their tyranny and control over the few counties that they'll have left. They would rather do that than not be able to do the evil deeds that they're getting away with today. And this should make complete sense, folks. And when you're looking at population centers, Georgia, when you're looking at a population center like Louisiana, where you've got, you know, New Orleans dictating what happens in most of the state, or when you have a big state like Texas, or when you have a big state like Montana, you should be able to start splitting these states up to where they're far more manageable, and that you don't have a population center that is no longer actually controlling this. Now, just imagine if we had all of the states that would split up, you know, just because of population centers or just because there is that much. So I'll give you a good case in point on Montana, but let's really focus quickly on just these, like the population centers, Washington State, Indiana, Illinois, so forth and so on. So when you look at these types of states and you split them up, because these are hardcore blue states, what will end up happening is you're going to actually expand the representation in the Senate to two red and two blue. What you've ended up doing is you've completely washed away the dominance that those two blue senators had.
and now you've actually bolstered your ranks, and you're going to shift the, and I'll use the, I hate the colors blue and red. I would rather use parchment. But anyway, we're going to shift the actual color, the makeup color of the Senate from blue to red, because every blue state, Washington, Oregon, California, California would be broken into multiple states. And so if you take California and you have two blue states and four red states that come out of California, do you see now you actually, you gain ground in the Senate, but you marginalize all the ground in the Senate if you actually break up all of these states. So in other words, if every blue state was actually split where you had a red state and a blue state in its place, then the blues would no longer be dominated. It would all shift back to the red. And so the constitutionality and the focus would be able to shift back as well. Now, when you look at, you know, how many states there are, this would grow the Senate probably by, I don't know, 14 seats or something like that. But when we look at Montana, when we look at California, when we look at Texas, those states should theoretically be broken into, you know, sub-states, where Texas would actually become maybe four or five states. And those four or five states, maybe even eight states. When we start looking at it in that perspective, then all of a sudden we can start seeing how this really helps establish a more constitutional bent in the Senate. And what ends up happening is that each of these states now actually expands. So here's a good case in point, Montana. So because this would really be in play. If Montana actually became five states, it would go from two senators to 10 senators representing all those people in Montana. And instead of one representative, they would have five. Wow. And they would actually have representation that would truly represent them better than the possible, you know, this one person representing a million. Folks, when we really start looking at the constitutions of the states, I think you're going to start realizing, and the necessity, because I'm actually going to throw this out here too, and I'm still on this side, this aside. In other words, I'm still down this rabbit hole. We're supposed to be going through Section 3 of Article 4. But the point is, I'm trying to show how statehood and how splitting the states and how we could create new states out of existing states. And on top of that, we can actually start allowing new states into the union from no, it doesn't matter where they are in the world. There's nowhere in the Constitution that keeps the United States, you know, canned into this very specific size. The fact that we're being controlled to this level is just absolutely amazing. The Constitution doesn't allow it, but yet they're doing it. And they know that if we actually started playing with this, because what would end up happening? Because there are like, let's just say there are 200 states in the union, or 200 countries in the world. And as all of these countries start coming into the United States, if we actually started breaking up the United States, Alaska became a few different states. And if we look at Hawaii, the islands themselves could become an independent, like the Big Island would be its own state, Oahu would be its own state, Kauai, and so forth. Going down this path to where we would end up having probably 120, 130 original United States states broken up into that many states now, then as we start bringing in more states, the ability to water down representation and the Senate and so forth, it doesn't even play into a threat. Folks, we'll talk more about this in the upcoming events or upcoming episodes. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates.
Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.